All right, we're actually holding in the middle of Nandalid, but we'll go back a little bit and review what we were talking about before. We started with the sugya had started with machloikas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. The Mishnah had told us that if you have an aver, if you have a limb from a living person or from a dead person that had, in other words, whether it was cut off a person when he was still alive or whether it was cut off after the person died, that has an basa karoy, enough flesh that if it was still attached to the person and the person was still alive, it would be able to regenerate and heal. If so, then that limb is definitely metame and nazir, and he has to shave and bring his carbonus, etc. What happens if it doesn't have that much flesh on it? So we had machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish had said that you still have to be a nazir, would still have to be megaleach, and Rabbi Yochanan had said no. And the Gemara discussed the pros and cons, what makes Rabbi Yochanan say that, what makes Rish Lakish say that. Then the Gemara had gotten into the question, what size limb are we talking about? If the limb is big enough that it has a limb normally has a bone in it. When we talk about an aver, usually the definition of an aver in halacha is something that has bust of a gidim v'atzamos. We used this term the other day. It has flesh, muscle, whatever, and bones and sinews or tendons or whatever it's called that connect the muscle to the bone. For example, something like the tongue wouldn't be considered an aver in halacha.
So a finger
is an aver, yeah.
Part of the finger is also an aver, or the finger is one aver?
The finger, no, I believe part of it is considered an aver because it has a few bones, exactly, yeah.
But the aver is what?
Because when we say Masayim Roshmane Vodim Yeshba Adam, when we say that a person has 248 limbs, the Mishnah in all this lists them. It lists, for example, there's 30 in the hands, 30 in the feet. That
so
30 includes,
part,
yeah,
part.
Includes each part, you have 14, part, yeah, you have 14 flanges in the fingers and another 15 or 16 or whatever it is, bones. In the rest of the hand,
right.
Yes, that makes sense.
Aver.
So the aver is so an individual section, an individual knuckle or whatever flange of the finger is called an aver. Yeah, but it has that boss of a giddy batzamis. The tongue, for example, wouldn't be considered an aver for this purpose. The eye wouldn't be considered an aver.
There's no ether in them, right?
Well, there are. I mean, in the inner ear, there's a little tiny bones. I don't know if those count.
That's what makes you hear. So.
Okay, fine, but nevertheless, I don't know. I mean, you know what? The definition of a bone is not necessarily the same in halacha. Is not necessarily the same as it is in biology. For example, I believe halacha considers the kneecap to be a bone. It considers it to be one of the 248. Whereas in modern terms, they say that it's a sesamoid. It's not considered a real bone. Whatever.
Okay.
Anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, let's say an eye or what have you could be metamic for other reasons, if it's a kazai, if it's flesh, if it's, you know, whatever the different other considerations are. But it wouldn't be metamic inside this idea of aver, because it doesn't have bone. Now, so the question becomes then, what kind of aver, hello, oh, hi Ellie, what kind of aver are we talking about then, that Rosh Lakish is saying that a nazir would have to be megaleach on it, even though it doesn't have basa karoy? If it has a bone in it that's the size of a soda, even Rabbi Yochanan should have to agree that you better not another shaves for that. Etzem kesoda, the time of magel gemasa.
We're talking about the nether with that bone.
But if we're talking about that it doesn't have a bone the size of a soda in it, then why would your shlokish say that it's metame? Assuming there's no bosa karoi, so it's not a kazayis of flesh either, we have a special limud that such an aver is matamah. So we'll go over the braises. We'll go over the two braises again. So we'll restart from the Gimel Amud Beis near the bottom. Six lines from the bottom. The Tanya. So the Tanya. So we learn in a braise as follows. The pasuk says v'chol asher yigal pnei asad, that anything that touches on the surface of the field. On the simple meaning, the surface of the field, this means not in an oil. So we're talking over here, in other words, on the face of it, we're talking about tumas maga, although the Braita is going to explain that we are talking about actually tumas oil. But we're not, remember, there's three kinds of tumas oil. You're above the tumah is above you, or both you and the tumah are under the same roof. We're going to say in a second that what we're talking about, so al-pnei asada means you're not under the same roof. That was talked about a few psukim earlier, adam ki yamas oil. Here we're going to be talking about the braisa. I'm going to say in a minute we're talking about where you're overshadowing the mess, the mess or the part of the mess. It's a sada. There's no overhanging roof, but you yourself effectively become the roof. You yourself, a piece of a mess is sitting here. You're leaning over it. You become tummy. So anyway, let's the pasuk goes, b'chol she yigal p'nei hasod, anything that touches on the surface of the field, b'chalal cherev, someone who's killed by the sword, or the mace, or a dead person.
But the sword being has to be by sword.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. Wait, relax. The pasuk continues, b'chalal cherev, or the mace, or the etzim adam, or in the bone of a person, or the cover, or in a grave, yitma shivas yamim, we'll become talking for 7 days. So the b'raisa darshan, the word means somebody who overshadows the face, the surface of the mess. Meaning, again, without that, without the pasuk saying that, we would know Tumas oil where you and the mess are under the same oil. We would not know that if you are over the mess, you become tamei. We learn that from B'cholosh Yigal Pnei Asodah. B'cholol. Now, when the pasuk says B'cholal Chereb, which the simple meaning of it is somebody who was killed by the sword. But there's no reason to mention it. I mean, the chumah is the same regardless whether a person was killed by a sword or a stone or died of natural causes or what have you.
Right.
Yeah. So what does it mean? That we divide it up. B'cholol the eva menachai, v'yeshloi l'halos harufa. The word cholol teaches us that you can become tamei from a limb from a living person which was cut off him. Rashi mentions, not by a sword necessarily, but cholol. So Rashi adds the word hanechlo menachai. That was like, it was made a corpse from a person. In other words, the person himself was alive, but the limb was now made dead by being cut off him.
It was
alive before. When it was attached to him, it had enough flesh on it that it would have been able to heal. It doesn't matter. Accidental amputation doesn't matter for our purposes. As long as Yeshloi L'Halos HaRucha, as long as there's enough flesh on it, and also I mentioned yesterday that Amnam also explains based on a Gemara in Chulin that it could also include the marrow inside the bone, as long as there's enough material in or around or whatever the bone for it to be able to eventually heal. That would be the...
No,
we're not talking about that, but we're talking about there also needs to be a certain amount of muscle. If more than a certain amount of the bone is exposed, then it's never going to heal anyway. It's going to die or whatever.
So when you say
muscle, it includes the blood vessels and the capillaries and whatever in it. Cherev. So we're talking about a limb that's detached from the body. But the point is, the bone still has enough flesh on it that if it was still attached to the body, it would have been able to heal. Cherev, when we say a sword, means harevet kecholol. We darshin that the pasuk mentioning a sword teaches us that the sword is just like the dead person. Now, what does that mean? There are quite a number of opinions of mepharshim about this, and we'll talk about it a lot more when we get to Nundalat on the Bay. This is a kind of funny expression in Tosfos in connection with that. Tosfos, for example, holds that it means only metal utensils. It doesn't just mean a sword. A sword is an example of a metal keli. So any metal keli that touches that touches a mess. And actually, we'll learn later on Nundalat. Oh, thank you. That Rabbeinu Tam holds not only if it touches, but even if it's an oil a mess. Even if that metal utensil is in the same oil as a dead body, it also becomes tummy. And becomes tummy to the extent of via boisa truma. It becomes exactly like the mess himself. Meaning,
a cherev is part of the body.
Not a cherev. A cherev is a sword. A cherev is not a part of the body. A cherev is a sword. So if a sword, if you have, for example, a sword or anything, it could be a nail. It could be a hammer. It could be a nail. It could be a metal cup. Whatever. If according to Tosfos over here, according to Rabbeinu Tam anyway, which we'll talk about later. Thank you. If that sword or what have you is in the same oil where a mess died,
the instrument,
whatever it is, it doesn't have to be the instrument that killed the person. It's just we're using a sword as an example of a metal utensil. Then that sword becomes just as much tameh, becomes an avia v'isa tumah, just like the mess himself. Meaning, for example, on the face of it, that would mean if a nazir were to now touch that sword, he would have to be megaleach. A koyin would be also to touch it, to be in the same oil as it, which we'll talk about later on how that works out in halacha. There's many other different opinions in halacha what exactly the cherev harev kecholol business means. The Rambam holds that it's not just metal utensils, that it applies to other materials as well. There's various Rishonim talk about, does it mean like Tosfos is saying over here that it's literally an avia v'isa truma, that literally it can cause a person to become tamei, or are we talking about only that it makes maybe tumas erev, that Ramban, I believe, holds that it only makes tumas erev, you only become tamei for one day, you don't need part adruma sprinkling maybe.
Right.
So according to that, it wouldn't be avia v'isa. Effectively, it would be sort of like an avia truma. There's a vast number of different opinions on the details. Whatever it is, all this we learn from this fact that the Pasuk mentions the sword. Cherev harei kacholo. Okay, then we continue. Oy b'meis. The Pasuk says if you overshadow, again we darshan from our pnei asada that we're talking about overshadowing. We started in order to clarify some stuff.
Okay,
so ze evra nechlam and hames. This refers to a limb that was cut off a dead person. Same thing as we said before about cholo, that they were talking about a limb cut off of a living person. Here we're talking about it's cut off a dead person. And again, where it has yesh be l'halas harocha. Not necessarily where it has l'halas. Well, we'll get to that soon. I mean, we're not yet talking. The Bryce hasn't said anything about l'halas harocha or not. Okay, then it says, the pasuk continues, that if you touch a bone of a person, this teaches us the concept of a quarter of a cob of bones that we've been talking about in the Gemara the last few days. If you touch a grave, that means a sealed up grave. Sealed meaning that there's no space of a tefach, right? Not sealed as opposed to open, but sealed as opposed to where there's no tefach al tefach al tefach above the mess. Meaning you can have two scenarios. You can have... Yeah, this is a diagram in the art school. Okay, I mean, you can have the mess, and then you build a solid monument on top of it where there's no space inside. There's no space inside the monument, or you can build it that there's a hollow inside. You build there's a hollow space above the mess, and then above that is the rest of the monument. You can have the same thing when a mess is buried in a coffin. The Gemara talks about it. The Gemara and Tosfos talk about it in Brachas, for example. Usually, a coffin. Most of the time, a coffin will have, there'll be at least a tefach between the top of the mess and the top of the coffin. There'll be at least a tefach of space here, but not necessarily.
And therefore?
The difference is, d'amamar, so we learn elsewhere in a Mishnah, tumah b'kasva, o'la b'kasva yedetis. The tumah goes straight up and down, meaning like this. If it's not a keber sasum, if there is an oil above the mess, then what happens is the tumah only extends the tumah only extends above the mess himself. Or actually, no. Sorry, if there's an oil, well, okay, there's a few different possibilities over here. If there's an oil, tefach al tefach al tefach, then actually what happens is the tumah is blocked, if it's inside an aura, and actually there's a difference between an aura and a kever for this purpose. So here we're talking about a kever. If there's tefach al tefach al tefach there, above the mess, what happens is that the tumah just goes... Let me rephrase that. What happens is like this. If it's a kever sasum, there's no cholol tefach, then what happens is we treat the whole kever as if the whole thing was occupied by the mess. Therefore, the tumor extends above, up and down infinitely around the whole kever. Around the whole caver, meaning even if you touch the sides of the caver, for example, you become tummy. If there's less than a tefach space somewhere in there, right?
Above the mess and below.
Above the caver and below the caver. So if this is the caver over here, the caver sasum, there's no space inside it. Yeah, it kind of looks to me like they got their pictures backwards. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like. I mean, if you look in Rashi, Zekever Sosum, She'en Becholo Tefach Ben Mes Va'Gerlo, Shematame, there's no space of a Tefach between the Mes and the Gerlo. And then V'Nasa, and Tuba B'Kasper, the V'Nasa Kever, the Kever becomes like the body of the Mes himself. Tam Halacholov, somebody who walks on top of that Kever, Hapapi She'en in a Gale, Amal, he doesn't touch it. He's only overshadowing it. Nevertheless, Tame, maybe they got their diagrams in the art score backwards. I don't know. Right, okay, that's, well, Bacaspa, or the Bacaspa, you're dead, then, okay, so it goes, okay, so maybe, actually, so, okay, maybe they do have, no, because, okay, so if there's, okay, so if there's no cholol tefach over there, right, okay, so then, yeah, I guess they do have their diagrams, right, after all, fine, if there's no cholol tefach, what happens is between the top of the body and the actual structure of the caver, that's like it's sealed, then what it is we just say the tumor just goes directly above the body. So if you were to go over here, for example, your tackle wouldn't become tummy. But if it's not a kever sasum, if there is that tefach al tefach al tefach in there, then what happens, usually we say a tefach al tefach al tefach constrains the tumor and doesn't prevent it from going out. With a kever, it's actually the other way around. It causes the whole kever becomes the oil, and therefore if you touch even the outside of it. Yeah. And therefore even if you touch the outside of it or walk on any part of the outside. So okay, I guess they do have their diagrams right after all. Okay, fine.
But between, let's say, the feet, between the top body, part of the body up on top and bottom, I understand, bottom is also more or less than
the same. When we say it on the bottom, what we mean is, in other words, if, you know, the body is buried on the ground over here, it means, in other words, if you were directly above it, you'd become tummy. And also, if you were to dig a tunnel and land and wind up directly underneath the body, you'd also become tummy. That's what it means, Vikasva or the Vikasva.
It
doesn't matter. No, what, if there's a tefach above, then that's the thing. Then the tumor only goes then from the caver and up, yeah.
Right. Did they discuss how high?
No. And that's why. And that's why actually it becomes a problem nowadays with planes flying over the water. Yeah. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Okay. So thus far, this Bryce has talked about what happens when in the case of oil. The Ivu Gabi Negia. Now let's go to the case of touching. Omer of Yehuda, Tanya, we learn in another Braisa. The Pasuk says, if you start to with you, V'chol HaNegeya or V'al HaNegeya, the Esim of V'cholol. There it just meant, it mentions a bone, a cholo, a mess, or a kever. So the etzem is the etzem kisoda. The word etzem means a bone the size of a grain of barley. Or the cholo is Abraham Nechlam and Achai Be'en Bar Lahalas Arucha. The word cholo teaches us the case of a limb that was cut off a living person and there's not enough flesh on it to regenerate. When it says a mess, means an aver that comes off a mess. Again, the same thing where there's not enough flesh. And what does it mean? This is adding the case that a kever from before the dibur, that is metame. Now, what does it mean before the dibur? Choice starts by saying before the dibur means before Matan Torah. So if you have a grave that existed before Matan Torah, then the vote would be, the pasuk is telling you, you become tame by touching it, but not by overshadowing it. That's why we have two different pesukim. The caver from before, we're talking about caver sosum, one that was created after Matan Torah. Here we're talking about one from before Matan Torah, which there's a famous machlokus in a number of places in Shas. We've talked about it, we learned about it in Yevamos, and we talk about it here and there, about whether graves of goyim are matama ba'oil. Reb Shimon says not. The other chachamim say yes. The halacha, in fact, is like Reb Shimon. But what would the other chachamim do? What would the other chachamim do with this? So Tosfos brings another explanation, actually, that lifnei adibur doesn't mean before Matan Torah. It means it can be people who died and were buried after Matan Torah, but before the parasha of Tuma was told to Moshe Rabbeinu, before this whole parasha of Parah Duma and the name of Tuma were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. So they're Jews, their bodies are matamet, and therefore we need to know that their kvarim are also their kvarim are also matamet. Tosfos also points out, by the way, that we had the Gemara mentioned, the Gemara in Bava Basra tells a story about Rabbana, one of the Amoraim, who was one of the later Tanoim, whatever, who was going and marking graves in Eretz Yisrael. In particular, we learned about this a lot in Moed Katan. They would mark the graves, they'd mark the footprint of the grave so that Kohenim stay away from it and know not to be, not become Tamei, and also so people don't accidentally carry Truma near there and make the Truma Tameh, or they themselves don't become Tameh and be Matameh Truma. And the Gemara tells a story over there about Rabban Noah going and marking the Morris and Achbelah. Apparently, I guess this was before the building that's there now was built on top of it. This is all before Matan Torah. And the Tosfos says, you know what, if the whole idea is, according to the Shimon, Atem Kruyim Adam, only the Jewish people are called Adam, therefore Kibir Goyim are not Matameh, fine. Adam Rishin is definitely called Adam. Avraham is called Ha'odam Agodah Ba'anakim. They definitely have the right to the name Adam. Yes, when we say Atim Kurim Adam and then Goyim are not called Adam, that means the run-of-the-mill Goyim, not Adam, V'chvodo V'asmei, and not Avraham, and the other others.
What about
Yishmael? He's not buried in the Maros Machpelah. So L'chora, he would be in the same category as where's Yishmael buried, I don't know. Okay. So that's what it means, lifnei adibur. Anyway, so now let's continue. So now this is where we were up to yesterday. So now let's consider hai aver and ames hechidami. So now in the second braisa, when we mention an aver from a dead person, what kind of aver are we talking about? If it contains a bone at least the size of a grain of barley, hainu hanegeya be'etzem. And we already mentioned hanegeya be'etzem, somebody who touches a bone. So that'll include an aver, that includes a bone. Hela de Les Ve'et and Kisoda. So we see the Braitha must be talking about a bone that does not have an aver that does not have a piece of bone in it the size of a barley corn. So either it's something like so it wouldn't be, it would have to be like a very tiny, like a finger bone, let's say, from a baby or something. Vafiloch. Sorry, the size of a grain of barley. So yeah. Nevertheless, the Torah is including it. So we see, so Rish Lakish goes. There you go then. So you see, it doesn't matter, Lahala Sarucha, not Lahala Sarucha. The second Brice was talking about a case where the limb does not have Lahala Sarucha, not very much flesh on it either. So not a Kazayas for sure, which would be, and no Ethan Kasavar either. But because it's a complete Aver, it's Matama. What would Rabbi Yochanan say? Amalach Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan can answer you. La'olam de'isve. No, actually, you have to be talking about a case where the Aver does have an etzim kisa'ora in it. And if it doesn't, then if it doesn't and it doesn't have lahalas arucha, then your taka would not become tamei from it. So lahalas are enough to regenerate, to heal. Very well, then Rabbi Yochanan says, given that, according to my shita, you can't say that such a limb is matame b'maga, because he infers from our Mishnah that it's not, then you must say that last braisa, we have to take out, we have to take that, the pasuk is to the context of the pasuk, so went negeya, touching, but we have to say, it's not talking about touching, tineo inyan, we apply it to a similar case of masa, carrying. Yes, in other words, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, I agree that in such a case, rather than an etzim kisa'ora, you don't have to tell me that an etzim kisa'ora is matame b'maga. We know that already. We want to use it to say that it's matame b'masa as well. It's matame by carrying as well.
So
the Rabbi Yochanan can still say, in other words, that if the limb does not have an etzim kisa'ora and also does not have basa k'dehalas arucha, then nothing happens. As opposed to Rish Lakish. Okay. The Mishnah continued. The Mishnah had finished off that if a Nazir becomes Tomei with any of these tumors, a Mazir b'shlishi b'shvi, he gets sprinkled on the food in the seventh day with parah drum of water, the sois of chula, and he loses the time of the Nazirus up to that point, and wounds his korbanos and starts over. Hey, Boyle, who's thinking about it? So now the Chachamim, the Yeshivalite, had a question. When the Mishnah says that he can't, the Mishnah finishes off by saying he can't begin his counting until he becomes tahor. So what do you mean until he becomes tahor? Remember that when a person is tamei mes, there's two stages of his tahara. In the case of a nazir, actually, there's three stages. With a normal case where a person is not a nazir, you have, he finishes, he gets sprinkled the last time on the seventh day. He tovels. At that point, it's a tegul yom. He waits till that evening. Now he's had a head of shemesh. Now he's a mechuz. Now, okay. So, and now next day he brings his korbanos. What stage are we talking about where he's able to start his recounting? Hadukhtani adshita b'shvi koi. Are we talking about that he's on the seventh day?
Are we coming back to the previous?
No. We talked about this much earlier in the Masechta. We actually had a three-way machloikus. Between Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda. We had Rabbi Rebbe in there also, and we had a three-way machlokes over there when the Nazir can start his counting from. Yeah.
So that's
what we're trying to figure out. Who does our Mishnah go like? So Abda Ovid Her of Shemesh. So our Gemara says Abda Ovid Her of Shemesh, but that it means he can't start until he actually has Her of Shemesh after he tovel, until he waits till the evening. Actually, it's nightfall. Nightfall, the first Mishnah in Brachas talks about it. Maybe it's like Kodesh Shabbat, Avos, Mishar Shachrayim, Nichnasim. Head of Shemesh means when the sun has completely gone down. Say the Kochavim, is it? That's what it means. Uvar Shemesh Vachar is the expression in the pasuk. The Gemara explains over there in Brachas that Uvar Shemesh means the sun goes down. The Tahar doesn't mean the person becomes Tahar, it means the sky is clean of light. The light of the sun has completely gone away, and therefore that's when you see the stars. So we're saying over here, Abda Ovid Her of Shemesh, although actually many Mefarshim say that maybe we shouldn't be Gerdus that, because if the Gemara is asking, that if the Gemara wants to say over here that our Mishnah might be like Rabbi Eliezer doesn't say you need Her of Shemesh. He holds you can already begin on the seventh day. So if we are Gerdus on the seventh day, right after he finishes getting sprinkled, if we're Gerdus, Abda Ovid Her of Shemesh, then you would have to argue that maybe the Gemara doesn't mean to say Rabbi Eliezer, maybe it means to say Rebbe. Rabbi Akiva Eger talks about in Tosfos Rabbi Akiva Eger on the Mishnah. Okay, Umani Rabbi Eliezer, and then our Mishnah would be according to Rabbi Eliezer, that as soon as he finishes getting sprinkled, already he can start his recounting on that day. Adum of a Shmini Kari, or maybe when it says that Abshi Yitzar means until the eighth day, till the eighth day, Umay Abshi Yitzar, Abshi Yavi Karbonai. So the word Abshi Yitzar would mean until he brings his Karbonas, Umani Rabbanan. And then our Mishnah would have to be according to the Rabbanan. Which, actually, the printed version of our Mishnah that we had on Memtes and Mabez actually said, Umaybi es Karbonais. And Tosus pointed out, obviously, based on our Gemara, that doesn't belong in the Mishnah. If it said Umaybi es Karbonais, we wouldn't have a reason to ask. On the other hand, other Mephoroshim counter, not necessarily. The Mishnah might just be saying, eventually, he's going to have to bring his Karbonas. Not specifically saying that he has to wait till then to start his recounting, just that it would be saying, fine, look at the next part of the Mishnah, namely the one that we're going to learn in a minute, at the bottom of our Amud. This next Mishnah is going to list the cases where even though a Nazir is Tomei, he does not have to shave and bring his club on us, etc. And it says he can start counting right away. So obviously then, the ratio when it says Adji Yitra must mean until he brings his club on us, he can't start. Umani, Rabbanani.
Because the Sefer
has to match the ratio. That's what he says, yeah. Umani Rabbanan. Therefore, our first mission over here has to be according to the Rabbanan. The Amin Nizirus Tara Ad Shmini Lechayla. They say that Nizirus Tara cannot begin until the eighth day. Which actually, we had another opinion over there. We had also the opinion of Rebbe over there, who said that you can begin on the eighth day, but you have to wait till the eighth day. But it can be before you bring your Karbanos. You can't restart on the seventh day. You have to wait for the eighth day, but it doesn't have to be specifically till you bring your Karbanos. It can be anytime on the eighth day. We learned it there from Sokim. Okay, so now our mission is going to talk about this next mission is going to talk about the cases where even though a Nazir becomes Tomei, he does not have to be Megaleach. So we've talked several times already that the Rambam has a shitta that any of the cases that a Nazir does not have to be Megaleach are Medivrei Sofrim. Which does Medivrei Sofrim mean purely Dirabonan, or does it mean sometimes the Rambam uses Medivrei Sofrim in the sense of something which is, it has the force of Doraisa, but it was only learned out with the Yudgur Midas Shachon and Dureshes Behem, and therefore it's sort of a weaker Doraisa, as opposed to something which was learned for Kabbalah, Ish V'Piyish, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, which is the genuine Doraisa, right? To give one example, I don't want to get too far off topic, but to give one example that Amma mentions in Hilchos Ishus, we know from the beginning of Kedushin, B'Shloisha Drachim Moshe Nifnis, the Kesef B'Shtar Rubiya, that Amma explains that actually only Bia is truly Midaraita. The other ones, Kesef and Shtar, are Midivere Sofrim. And everybody jumps on him for that, and Rashi mentions in a number of places in Shas that his Rebbeim said something similar based on various Gemaras we have at the beginning of Kesubas, for example, that Kesef and Shtar are only Medivere Sofrim, and Rashi very strongly argues with that, Hayitachen, we know a woman is an HSH, regardless how the condition was done. But what it means is that Rambam uses Medivrei Sofrim in the sense of we don't know Kesef and Shtar explicitly from the Pasuk. We only learn them with Yud Gil Midas, Kicha Vistayefrin, etc., as we'll learn in a few months' time in Kedushin Be'ez Hashem. So there is. But in other words, it's not. When the Eibishter gave Moshe Rabbeinu the Din of Kedushin, he told him explicitly that Bia creates Kedushin, Ki Yitach Eishisho V'Ala. And he put in the Pasuk words that were left for the Chachamim to darshan other possible methods of Kedushin, which then they darshan, Bapashtas, even in Moshe Rabbeinu's time, and came up with Kesef and Shtar. But in that sense, they're Medivrei Sofrim, because they're not part of the original description that the Eibishter gave Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak. It was left as an exercise for the Chachamim to figure it out.
Why are we doing?
Anyway, so Mishnah says, "Avala schochos that price, but schochos and price." So the Gemara will give definitions of those, but briefly, schochos is a tree that overhangs the ground. There's a few different explanations of them. Yeah, it's Moshe Schach. Schach just means something that overhangs. Yeah. Okay. What it means is like, the point is, the general explanation is that there's tumma someplace under that tree. So what the exact scenario is, various Mephoroshim Tosfos over here, and there's a Tosfos in Nida, and then Rashi over here, and whatever, give various details of what the exact scenario is. Is it For example, we know that for an oil to transmit tumor from one place to another, it needs to be a tefach wide. So are we talking about that the branches are a tefach wide, but the tumor is someplace under one of the branches, buried in the ground, let's say under one of the branches. We don't know which one. So if the nazir were to walk under all the branches, sure, he's tameh no matter what. But if he walks under only one of them, then it's only a suffix. Now, and one...
So it's not really like an oil where the tumor spreads around.
Well, so that's the thing. What it really is you have, effectively, what you have is a bunch of different individual oilim that are separated by spaces. Now, in Masechta Olos, it talks about this kind of thing. If you have, for example, if you have a roof where you have a plank of the roof here and another one here and another one here, as long as there's enough space between them, the tumor doesn't spread from, not even, yeah, as long as there's a tefach of space between them, the tumor doesn't spread from one to the other. If there's a tumor under this one, you stand under this one, you don't become tummy. So by that logic, with our tree... No.
What?
No. We don't say logwood by tumor. No.
It's
less than three tefachim, yeah. But we don't say lovered when it comes to tumah. Actually, the Gemara and Sukkah points that out based on one of the Mishnayos and all those things. Anyway, so here we're talking about our tree over here. By assumption, you have a branch of tefach here, a branch of tefach here, a branch of tefach here. They're not connected. I mean, they're connected at the other end of the tree, but they're not connected when they spread out. So therefore, you walked under one of those branches. You may be tumah. You may be not. Now, one more detail we have to be talking about this is in Rishus HaRabim. The general rule throughout Shas, Sofik Tumah Rishus HaRabim is Tahar. We learn it from Sota, so we'll probably talk about it in the Sefer Sota, but there's a general rule that if you have a Sofik in Rishus HaRabim, whether you're Tumah or not, then you're Tahar. So Midaraisa, according to that, there shouldn't be an issue here at all, according to this explanation. Only Midrabanan is there a problem in the first place.
If you have, let's say, one tefach between the
branches,
but they're connected
laterally. Let's not get into that right now. That's too complicated to get into at the moment. But, yeah. So that's one way of looking at it. The other possibility is we could be talking about even the branches are less than a tefach wide, but they're close together. The Rambam, for example, I think holds that way because they're close together enough that you might be able to, let's say, spread cement over the branches and it would stay up. So therefore, that's considered enough. It's considered enough to be an oil as well.
Only one layer.
Yeah, it could be all one layer. Yeah, there's also they talk of the different mechoshim. Also talk about the possibility. No, but the point would be that midaraisa wouldn't be an oil because none of that, according to that explanation, midaraisa wouldn't be an oil because none of them are tefach wide. Only midrabanan, because this business thing could put cement on top of it, therefore it would be tummy only midrabanan. Another possibility about the
soft
same thing, tumas oil. But again, because it's only midrabanan, then the nazir doesn't shave for it. There's other possibilities also, one of them some beforeshim talk about, because the branches are connected at one end, they're connected to the tree at one end, so even though they spread out at the other, therefore the chacham himself would need to be gozer on it. Whatever, that's chachos. Vaproy. Price is when you have stones sticking out of a wall. So again, there's a few different possibilities what we're talking about. Are we talking about the stone is a tefach wide, but again, you don't know which one the mess is buried under, and therefore it's again the same kind of suffix tumah versus rabim. Or again, are we talking about narrow stones but they're close together? A similar idea to scholars. Uvesa pras, also a vesa pras, we learned about this in Psachim, we've talked about it here and there, and then in Mekotten and various other places. This is a field where there was a caver, and then somebody plowed that field. Midaraisa, we say no problem. Either some Mephoshim say the reason is we assume the plow didn't go that deep. Usually Mason are buried deeper than a plow will go. Or other Mephoshim say even if we think the plow might have reached the grave, it probably broke up the bones into little tiny fragments, and none of them is big enough to mitame. Midrabanan, they said that 100 amos in each direction from that caver, which is as far as you usually go with one stroke of the plow, is tummy, just in case there are bone fragments there. So again, if a nazir walks into a beta plas, he's tummy. But
100
amos is about 150 feet. The Eretz Amim and the lands of the Goyim, which are Tomei Midrabanan, for reasons that we'll talk about in Omvez, the Golol the Adofik, and the Golol and Dofik. So Golol and Dofik, Tosfos explains over here that in various places in Shas, including in Rilut and Ksubos, for example, Rashi explains that Golol is the top of an Oren, the top of the coffin, and the Dofik are the side pieces. Tosfos themselves says that no, the Golol actually means the Matseva, on top of the Kaver, and the Dofik is like the little stones that help hold it up. And then there's a couple of other explanations that Mefarshim have. Golol literally means roll. It means something that rolls. So the Mefarshim explained that a golol is, they used to bury, well, we'll learn towards the end of the Masechta, they used to, in those days, they would often make kvarim by hollowing out like niches in a wall and then put the oren in there. So a golol would be like a stone that you roll in front of there to keep the mess from sliding out or whatever. And again, the dofik would be sort of like, you know, when you're jacking up your car and you put chucks under the wheels to prevent it rolling, that would be a dofik that you chuck under the golol over there to keep it from rolling away. Whatever it is, the golol and dofik are only metame, are only tamei midrabanan. So either they're only tamei midrabanan, and therefore it's the same thing as the rest of the things in our Mishnah, or maybe they are tamei d'oraisa, but it's not a tumah from the mess itself, so therefore we make on it. Revius dam and a revius of blood, the oihel. We talked about whether a revius dam is d'oraisa, yeah, but even if it is, the point would be that it's not considered, that it's not a serious enough tumah for the nazir to have to be megaleach for. The oihel, the roiv atzamis, and an oihel and a quarter calf of bones. When we say over here, the roiv atzamis, the Rambam brings a possibility that maybe it's actually those two things go together. The oihel roiv atzamis, an oihel in which there is a roiv of bones.
Of bones,
which we said before, half a calf is enough to make a nazir megaleach. Less than that, a quarter of a calf is a tamei person, but not enough to make the nazir have to shave. The other possibility, if the oil and the roiv atzamis are two separate things, then it means if the nazir touches the actual oil that was the oil ames. In the Sefer Shabbos, it says in Perek Mamemad Litkin that an oil made out of cloth, for example flax, for example linen or any other cloth, itself becomes tamei and needs to be sprinkled with far abim water, etc. If the nazir were to touch that oil, he becomes tamei to much shiva, but he wouldn't have to shave it. The kalim are nogim a mess, and kalim that touch a mess, will be made sofroi, and the days if a nazir doing his nazirus becomes a mitzora, you may sofroi is the days after his taras is over, when he's brought the birds and all that it describes over there at the beginning of Parshas Mitzora, the birds and the water and whatnot. After that, he shaves and waits 7 days, and then gets shaved again and brings his kavanos. Those 7 days are called you may sofroi. We make gomroi, and the days when he's definitively a mitzora, when he's sent outside of the city, etc. Al elu ena nazir megaleach. All those, even though he's tamei, the nazir does not have to shave. Actually, in the case of taras, Tosfos points out he would have to shave because of the taras, but he doesn't shave. In other words, he doesn't shave as a nazir tamei. He shaves as a mitzora, not as a nazir tamei. Umazav shlishi v'shvi. He still gets sprinkled with part of drinking water the third and seventh days. The ain't the process, I quote him, but he doesn't lose the days that he counted of nazirus up until this point. Umaschal amoyne miyad. He can begin counting his nazirus again immediately as soon as he becomes tar. So the days of tumah themselves don't count. So, for example, he touched his doyle or joyfik or what have you. He becomes tummy for 7 days. Those days, his nazirus is sort of suspended. So he declared nazirus, let's say, for 30 days. He becomes tamei with one of these things on the 20th day. His nazirus is on hold until the seventh day, then he continues from there. He doesn't have to start over the whole 30 days.
Only the girl
and
the
nazirus? No, all the ones I mentioned in our Mishnah. I'm just using girl and the nazirus as an example. The carbon aimline, he doesn't bring a carbon. The emes amru, in truth, they said, and the Gemara points out in a number of places that the expression the emes amru means that it's a halach l'moshe misinah. That you may hazava, the days when a zav or a zava are tamei, the 7 days that they're tamei and the 7 clean days that they have to count, the mayas gerish amatzora, and the days during which a matzora is quarantined before it's definitively taras, let's say he comes with a spot and there's no white hair or michir or what have you in it, and he has to be closed up in a room for 7 days, and then the kohen comes and checks it out, those days, harei lo'olam, those actually count towards his nazirus. a meeting, 20th day of a 30-day nezirus, he becomes, he gets the spot of tzaraas, he comes to the kohen, there's no white hair, no nothing, so the kohen locks him up, he's a suffix. On the 27th day, he comes and the kohen checks him out. Let's say at that point the tzaraas has gone away, or let's say not even, let's say the tzaraas is still there, but there's still no white hair or nothing, so he locks him up for another week. Fine. He hasn't lost any of his nezirus. He's now 27 days into his nezirus. Not 20 days of a suspension like before, but 27 days. So the Gemara says, what are schachos? Even a mesa chalaoreth, a tree that overhangs the ground, according to the different possibilities that we just mentioned, or prois hayotis menageder, and prois are stones that stick out of a fence. So again, the Tosfos says over here that the stones are from a fence around a beis hakavaros. So there might be, for example, a stillborn baby or some other tiny thing like that buried under one of the stones, but you're not sure which one. The Mishnah had mentioned the lands of the Goyim. So, Al-Pichsidus, it talks about, you know, it's in Tanya these days that there's clear the whole outside of Eretz Yisrael, so it was clitoris. But here the Gemara is focusing on the reason for it in Halacha. Yeah. Now, the Chachamim had a question. Eretz Ha'amim Mishum Avira Gazur Alei, or Jumim Mishum Gusha Gazur Alei? Were they Gusha? Let me explain. Relax. Is it that the air of Eretz Ha'amim itself is Tamei? Or is it only the gush? Is it only the clods of dirt there? In other words, there's no question if you walk into Eretz Ha'amim in your tummy. There's two different ways we can look at the tumah of Eretz Ha'amim. One is we say that outside of Eretz Yisrael, they're not careful to mark karim, goyim bury just anywhere. You have Mesei Mabul, for example. You have all the people who were killed in the Mabul, and then their remains are all over the world, etc. So because of that, you could argue because of those kinds of things, if you walk into or you touch land, you touch earth, Eretz Ha'amim, or you walk into it, then fine, you become Tamei. But we could argue, let's say, for example, you go there in a shita table, or somebody carries you in a box, or you drive, or in modern terms, you drive in a car or something, maybe you're not Tamei.
Eretz Yisrael and the Mabul was
safe. Yeah, the Gemara talks about it in Zachem, it's Machlokes over there, actually, but we'll learn towards the end of the Masechta that Eretz Yisrael was considered Tahar, at least in those times. Nowadays, it's a different question. Anyway, so that's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is that even the Avir, even the air over there is Tamei, which means, and why would that be? What could possibly be outside Eretz Yisrael. What could possibly be the problem with the air? What could be the problem if you go in there and a shit a table amigdal? The Chachamim wanted to discourage people from moving out of Eretz Yisrael, especially Koyanim. So therefore, they figured if they declare Eretz Ha'amim as Tamei, then Koyanim are not going to go there. So that's the question. What was the underlying reason for the Gzeira? Is it that the dirt is likely to have remains of Mesim in there, which are going to be the Tamayu, or is it that the air is Tamei because they don't want Koyanim and so forth to leave? Well, Toshma, come, let's prove from our Mishnah. The Avir includes Gush. Obviously, if you can become Tamei from the Avir, then of course you're going to become Tamei from the Gush. So Toshma, Umazib Shlishi Bishri, come, we can prove from the fact that our Mishnah mentions, after all the Tumas that I mentioned in our Mishnah, it mentions that the person has to be sprinkled on the third and seventh day. Riyamad Bashmavira, now if you're going to say the problem in Eretz Ha'amim is the air, Hazal Lamali, what do you need to be sprinkled? If the whole idea is to discourage people from going, but the air itself is not actually Batama you in any way that you'd need part of a sprinkling, then you wouldn't.
Well, the air, if it's the air that's coming, the air also comes over and it's dry.
That doesn't matter. We don't mean air as in the actual molecules, the actual oxygen, and we mean the space. Elalav Mishum Gusha. So the Chorah, that proves that the Tumas Eretz Ha'amim, the fundamental thing, must be the actual dirt. It's Tamei.
Yeah, I don't think it's from the Torah.
Yeah, but that's, yeah.
But it's space. We don't mean the
it means the space. So when it comes to the dirt, it's different. When it comes to the dirt, there's a Gemara we'll learn in Gittin in a couple of months, Be'ez Hashem, the Gemara talks about, for example, what if, let's say, you import vegetables from Chutz La'aretz and there's still dirt stuck to the roots of them? If the problem is the gush, then you may have a problem of tumah over there. Because what if in that clod of dirt there's a bit of a mess over there or whatever.
And Israel import bricks from outside.
So bricks are less of a problem because they've been fired in a kiln, and therefore the bricks are a bit less of an issue. But whatever, we'll. Yeah. Okay. So the answer is, the Gemara says, loy, not necessarily. You could argue maybe that the problem, that the Chachamim were gozer because of airspace itself. I, what about the being sprinkled with Harabim? Fine, when the Mishnah says, Mazah b'shlishi b'shvi, doesn't mean in every single case in our Mishnah you have to be sprinkled. There are exceptions. Eretz Amim is one of them. So if a person were to go into Eretz Amim in a shita tevo migdol or in an airplane, he wouldn't need to be sprinkled. He would become tamei, but he would not to the extent of having to be sprinkled with hot adrum water. But he would become tamei. Once it's hachin amim established, okay, that actually seems logical. Mitkatoni v'kelim anogim ames, because the Mishnah also mentioned the case where another touches kelim that touched a mess, and we have to ask, hani kelim b'nei azon inun. Are we talking about how would that, if another touches Kalim, why would he need Hazah? Mela, he becomes Tomei, Tomas Erev, let's say, why would he need Hazah? El Shemami Nashara. So obviously the Mishnah must be including things that you don't need Hazah, but it's just this list, it's giving a whole list. Some of these things you'd need Hazah. So this is where Tosfos has a discussion about this. What are we using? Yeah.
Things where you do need Hazar.
Okay, because the Mishnah is not dealing with the dinim of Hazar. But the dinim of Hazar are in the Masechta Parah. Here we're dealing with what another has to be Megaleach and not be Megaleach on. So Tosfos discusses like this. Tosfos says like this. We're talking about over here, on the face of it, we must be talking about metal caving. Tosfos brings an explanation from Rabbi Yitzchok Misimpon, which is also the Shita of the Rambam that I mentioned before, that this Cherev HaReu Kecholo that we talked about before applies not only to metal kelim, but all kelim. But Tosfos brings over here, Tosfos disagrees with that, that Tosfos says over here, that look, our Gemara is saying that if a Nazir were to touch kelim on Nogim Ames, that he's not, on the face of it, we're saying that he doesn't need Hazar, which applies, he's only Tomei Tumas Erev, he's only Tomei to the extent of having to go to the Mikvah. So Cherev HaReu Kecholo, therefore Tosfos says, must be limited only to metal kelim. How would the Rambam learn it? The Rambam might learn that there's a different girsa that some Rishonim have over here instead of Hani Kalim, that actually the Gemara is referring to rather the cases of Saras in our Mishnah. Saras obviously doesn't involve sprinkling of paragram of water, and yet we see it's included. So obviously the Mishnah is including things that don't need Hazar. Returning to Tosfos then, Rabbi Natam says in Tosfos that so on the one hand, Rabbi Natam is more makel than the Rambam and Rabbi Yitzchok Misimpon, that he says Cherev HaReu Kecholo only applies to metal kelim. On the other hand, he's more machmir than them in that he says that it means they become an avi avoy satoma. And not only do they become an avi avoy satoma, meaning that they were metame a person, but not only if they touch the mess, but even if they were the same oil or the mess. Which brings according to Rabbi Natam. So then, the Gemara in Tosfos is a funny expression. Rabbeinu Chaim Koyin, one of the other Baalei HaTosfos, sent a message to Rabbeinu Tam. According to your Shitta, he uses an expression from Pasuk. Eza Bayis HaShetivna, he uses an expression from Pasuk. What house would you build for me? Me being a Koyin, where could I possibly live? Inevitably, any house is going to contain nails and other such things that have one time or another a mess has been in that house. So according to you, if a mess dies in a house, a Koyin is never allowed to live in that house, Lachora. Actually, there's one more detail that we need for this. We were talking about a Nazir over here, but there's a in Masechta Smachos, in one of the Masechta Chanas, it lays down a general rule: any tumor that a Nazir would have to be Megaleach for, a Koyin is not allowed to become Tomei for. So if we're going to say if our Gemara, let's figure out the thing as follows: if our Gemara is implying that if a Nazir touches, for example, a wooden keli that was in an oil mess, he doesn't become tamei to the extent of having to be megaleach. But if he touched a sword or a metal keli or whatever that was in there, he would, because cherev hareu kecholo. And if things have been a time that it's not just if it touched the mess, but it was in the same oil of the mess, it means a house that's built with nails, for example, you'd have to sprinkle the nails with part of the water for them to become tamei. We don't have that nowadays. So how is a Koyin supposed to live in any house? The house, okay, well, they didn't have plastic involved, and then turn to the sign. But a better time holds that it's not just Kanoigim. No, that's because all Gemara is talking about, I mean, that's the thing. That's why Tosfos explained that we must be talking about here clay shetef. Kalim that can be toibled, like wooden kalim or whatever. As opposed to metal kalim, you have a special rule, Cherev HaReu Kecholo. Tosfos, in other words, is learning what the Gemara is saying over here is if you had a wooden keli there that was in the oil or touched the mess or whatever, then it only becomes an avat tumma, or only becomes a rishon tumma rather. If the nazir touches it, it becomes an avat tumma. But if the nazir touches it, he becomes only a rishon tumma, only tamei tumas erev. But according to Rabbeinu, but in the case of a sword or a metal keli, that's different. Cherev harayu kacholo. If cherev harayu kacholo, and if Rabbeinu Tam holds that applies even to an oil, then that's Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen's question. Is a bayis hashatignuli? What kind of house are you going to build for me? So what is the deal? So there's a lot of different discussions about this. First of all, the Raivad actually says that all Kohenim nowadays are considered Tomei Met. It's based on that Raivad that we don't go into the Parabais nowadays. So why would that be? Because, yes, based on this idea, if indeed any house that has Met was ever anywhere in that house, all the metal fixtures and nails and whatnot in it become Tomei, and then there's a Tomei Kohen who's in that house, because there are Biyavai Satchama, then yes, every Kohen nowadays, even in Eretz Yisrael, is the Cheska, Tomei Met. But there's a lot of other different explanations. First of all, Tosfos in various places in Shas says that maybe we don't accept what it says in the Sefer Smachos. Maybe there's not that equation between a Nazir and a Kohen. Maybe there are things that a Nazir would have to shave for, but a Kohen is not Muzher to stay away from them. So therefore, in other words, in Shulchan Aruch it brings a different opinion. In Shulchan Aruch it brings a different opinion. It says ideally a Kohen should be careful, but if he can't, there's no choice, and he has no choice. But that's what the halacha is. So anyway, there's various other. The Rambam, by the way, has a very unique shita on this whole business as it relates to a nazir. The Rambam says normally, if a nazir touches a keli, that touched a mess, then yes, he would be tamei and have to be sprinkled with paradruma water. But in the case of a nazir, the Rambam says we make an exception. Why do we make an exception? Because we don't want him to lose his nazir. Therefore, we'll make an exception, and on the face of it, the Rambam seems to be saying he doesn't have to be sprinkled with paradruma water in that case. Some of Farshim learn that the Rambam doesn't mean he doesn't have to be sprinkled, he has to become tar after all, but he doesn't have to be sprinkled in order to continue his nazirus. Even without being sprinkled, he will be able to continue his nazirus once the tumor is over. Once the 7 days or whatever are over. He should be sprinkled in order to actually get rid of the tumor. But without losing, he won't lose days on that basis. But that's the Rambam's shita. Nobody else holds like that. But anyway, returning to this business of a Kohenim, so you have the various possibilities, either that the halacha is not, that there's this equation between a Nazir and a Kohen, or that the halacha is not like there had been a time that even if it was an oil a mess, only if it actually touched a mess, or another possibility, which I mentioned before, I believe that Ramban holds, that even if it touched the mess, Cher Barayu Kecholo doesn't mean that it becomes an Aviyah Voice Tumah, just an Ava Tumah, so it only makes him Tomei Tumas Erev for one day, rather than Tomei to the extent of Paradruma water, and therefore, again, it wouldn't be such an issue for a Kohen. So you have a variety of different possibilities. Like I say, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that if a Kohen can be careful, then so much the better, but if not, then he can't. And then we allow the cooler based on what Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen is saying, that after all, Cohen has to have some place to live. Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen comes up on another interesting thing in Tosfos, by the way, where he says that if he had been around, apparently he was contemporary of Rabbeinu Chaim because he wrote to him, but apparently he wasn't there when Rabbeinu Chaim was Nifter. He says if I was, I would have become Tomei for him. Because that's one of the examples of the Kohenim were Tamei for a Nasi Bistral, which had been a time in his times was the equivalent of a Nasi Bistral. There's also this, they don't get into the question of Tzadikim or not Tamei yet.
Where was he?
Rabbeinu Tam was in France.
Where?
A town close. Most of his life he lived in a city called Ramru, if it's called in Jewish literature. At some point he moved someplace else, I think, but I don't remember where. Vaguely eastern, northern, whatever, yeah.